You're attending this Justice and Peace conference here in the Vatican. The premise for this conference is that the Catholic Church is a powerful force for peace, and yet the work isn't widely known, isn't widely appreciated, perhaps. Do you agree with that, first of all?
Yes, I do think that the Catholic Church is a powerful force for peace in the world, partly because the Church is present in so many places, where, in so many corners of the world where violence is a major problem, and is working at every level imaginable to promote peace. So the Church is present at a very grassroots level, and all the way up through societies. In many places, the Church has both national and international access to decision makers. And I think that because of the many levels at which the Church is able to work, the peace work of the Church can be extremely effective. It's also true that Catholic theology has very deep gifts to bring to the work for peace. And so whether it is our sacrament of reconciliation or our deep belief in the intrinsic value of every human life, our deepest beliefs give us strong motivation to work for peace.
You've been particularly involved in the work at decision-making level, haven't you, in Washington, throughout the US. Tell us a little bit about the work that goes on here and how successful you think this top-level work, if you want to call it that, has been.
I think it's probably mixed. At a top level, I believe that the most important, there are two parts to our job when we're interacting with high-level decision-makers, whether they're in the United Nations or the US government or in any other government or agency. One is to find ways to bring the experience of people who are the victims of war, of terrible violence, into the circles where decisions are being made. And the second is to reflect our values in that same process. So our ability to be successful in some ways depends on our ability to do those two things, to facilitate the voices of the victims of violence and to lift up the values that we hold very dear. Whether that's effective in political terms depends on the moment. I do believe that it is appreciated. Very often, both in my work for Mary Knoll and in my work with Pax Christi, very often we are told that voices that come into that level of decision-making debate without self-interest are very important. So I think that what we do is important and valued, whether it actually has an impact in shifting the world away from war and violent conflict, I'm not too sure.
Can you give me any examples of areas where you feel that your work, your efforts at reconciliation and bringing forth the voice of the victims, can you give me any examples where you really feel you have had some kind of objective success?
Probably one very specific example is from a few years ago, but current now because of the great attention that Kony 2012, that YouTube video got. Pax Christi, specifically Pax Christi, IKV Pax Christi Netherlands, was very instrumental in convincing the Lord's Resistance Army, Joseph Kony, to actually sit down for a series of almost successful peace talks with the government of Uganda. At times, that's the sort of work that we do that has a measure of success. In other places, for example, in Haiti, in Cité Soleil, in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, which was just a few years ago one of the most violent gang-infested parts of Haiti, a small, very effective Pax Christi group there has both started a Sports for Peace program that's extremely successful and is also helping young people in that barrio, in that neighborhood, to learn about other ways of resolving conflict, to identify heroes from all parts of the world, people who have been effective in moving toward peace. Cité Soleil is quite a different place, I think, because of the work of this small Pax Christi group there. In other parts of the world, for example, in England, Pax Christi's work is much more at a parish level. Well, it's at a parish level and at an advocacy level with the British government. And Pax Christi there is known very well for the very consistent education about peace that it brings into parishes and into Catholic schools, and for its consistent voice for peace in relation to the British government. Those are successes because they change hearts, and also because they open the possibilities for young people in terms of what the future might look like and how they might participate in the future.
These are long-term goals that you're working on, that you're looking at. It's often difficult to see the measure of success when there seem to be so many setbacks on a daily or weekly or monthly basis.
That's very true. In fact, of course, there are many different dimensions of the work for peace. Some dimensions of peace building are more tangible, more immediate, in places where, for example, during conflict, the parties in conflict are being held to account for following the Geneva Conventions and so on, or in places where conflict resolution has succeeded in avoiding a violent conflict, or in places where, following conflict, there is real progress made toward reestablishing a positive relationship within the society between groups that were previously at war. But much of the work of building peace is very long-term. It's really changing the hearts and minds of people, changing the direction of government policy or intergovernment policy that moves away from an assumption that the only response to conflict is violence, begins to build skills for thinking in new ways. In the U.S., for example, we have been talking for the last several years about the importance of thinking about sustainable peace that provides security, real security, for everyone around the world, that we think about building that sort of sustainable pathway to peace. That's a very long-term project, and it really does require shifting the use of our resources, where we spend our time, how we divide our budget, what we emphasize in our educational systems, and so on, to redefine security, to redefine what conflict means and how to resolve conflict, to understand the connections between development in the best sense and peace, or to understand better the role that really good diplomacy can play in avoiding conflict. All of those directions it's still a long road to accomplish that kind of change of mentality, change of culture in many ways.
We're marking the 50th anniversary of Pope John's landmark encyclical Pacem in Terris. How much do you think that the guidelines, if you like, the inspiration in that document is still valid for today's world and today's conflicts?
I think it is a document that is absolutely relevant to these times. The Holy Father's vision of peace, his emphasis on human rights as a part of the work for peace. Pacem in Terris should be held up in this time of its anniversary, and we should each read it very carefully again, because it absolutely is an important document for these times as well.
Would you say that today's world, perhaps, that the Pope then was looking at the nuclear crisis, and yet, in many ways, today's world looks a more dangerous place than it was even 50 years ago?
In many ways, that's true. Of course, the nuclear danger has not disappeared. We are, in fact, at a point in time right now when the danger of either a terrible accident or the actual use of nuclear weapons is certainly on the horizon, and the urgency of the task of nuclear disarmament, complete nuclear disarmament, is even more serious than it was 50 years ago. We do have new dangers, though, in these times. In many ways, what used to be a very organized kind of global confrontation between the East and West has dissolved into a kind of conflict that has many different centers and many different players, quite a few of which, many of which, are non-state actors, which makes the task of avoiding violence, of avoiding violent conflict, and of ending violent conflict very difficult now. We simply are not now challenged with bringing the U.S. and the Soviet Union to the table to write treaties, although those are still extremely important. We're now worrying about not only the proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, which is certainly a problem that is as serious as the ongoing possession of weapons of mass destruction, particularly nuclear weapons, by certain states. But we're also dealt with trying to respond to a violence that feels very random and yet is present at many different levels of society. So in many local communities in Latin America and other parts of the world, people are dealing in a very immediate way with a random kind of violence that somehow brings together the violence of drug trafficking and the mafia, the violence of gangs, the violence of small arms and light weapons that have simply flooded the world. In those kinds of situations, people, day by day by day, live with a tremendous amount of insecurity, and that is a very difficult situation to respond to. In addition to that, we have what seems like a proliferation of violent forms of extremism that actually have little to do with religion, but are often masked by one religion or another, or use the cover of one religion or another, that adds additional complications to the search for peace. So yes, it's a long answer to your question, but I think we do live in a time that is extremely complicated and in which the pursuit of peace is yet a very difficult one.
There's also a feeling, a widespread feeling among people, that individually they can do very little, that the task of building peace is simply too big for them to be able to tackle. And yet part of your work is trying to convince people that it does start with you.
Absolutely, it does start with us, each one of us. It starts with us in our own, the way we treat ourselves as human beings and temples of the Holy Spirit. It certainly affects how we are in our interpersonal relationships and close to home. But the work for peace is also a work of living as if we were at peace. Although we are far from that panacea, if you will, from the new creation where peace will abound, nevertheless, if we don't begin ourselves and in our families and in our local communities and in our neighborhoods and on, living as if we were at peace, we will never have the capacity to build the kind of complex peace that is needed in the world at this time. So what each of us does is critically important. And even though we may not feel like we're putting the last period at the end of the sentence in the work for peace, each one of us contributes in very significant ways to the building of a peaceful world.